I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show.
Hi, this is Howard Jacobson, and I'm delighted to be talking today to Lindsay Nixon, the happy herbivore. Hello, Lindsay.
Hi.
Hey. So, I got to know you a little bit or through your work, and I noticed that at the in the back pages of Whole, there's a whole page. I think we share a publisher, so there's a whole page about your Happy Herbivore series. And I have to admit, I've ordered them. I haven't gotten them yet. And so I can't speak from experience, although I do find myself salivating at your website. So that's definitely a good sign. Tell us a little bit about what is the Happy Herbivore, the website, the books, and then we can kind of go into what you do and your journey and other important stuff.
Sure. So about, oh gosh, I guess it was October 2007, I had just a few months before that switched to a whole foods, plant-based diet, no oil, low fat. I had read the China study, and I read some other books that were also supportive of this lifestyle. And I wanted to, you know, live it, but I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find a cookbook or really anything to help me, and so I was figuring it out on my own, and I thought, well, maybe there's some other person other than me out there that's trying to do this. So I started a blog, which blogs were very, they weren't as popular as they are today. They were relatively new back then. And so I just started blogging about what I was eating and what I was making, and I called it Happy Herbivore. And never, you know, in my wildest dreams did I expect anyone to read it, but you know, people did, and it became popular, and that led to my first cookbook, which I called the Happy Herbivore Cookbook. And then that cookbook was a great, you know, it did really well. So then I wrote Everyday Happy Herbivore, and that one did well. So I did Happy Herbivore Abroad, which came out this past December, and I have another one coming out this December. So it's been, you know, a dream, but really exciting. But mostly I'm just really happy that now there are recipes that, you know, follow this approach, this lifestyle that you and I both follow, for people to try, whether they're looking to go plant-based or maybe start slow and just add more healthy meals into their diet.
Right. I'm laughing because I transitioned in 2004. And without naming names, I did find a couple of cookbooks, and they were almost enough to put me back on the standard American diet.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Well, I did find a couple of, like, vegan cookbooks, but they weren't healthy. They used, like, gobs of oil and these strange ingredients that I couldn't find anywhere. So I had, like, that sort of experience too. I was like, oh, gosh, maybe I can't do this. But then I was just like, I'll be in the kitchen. Maybe I'll just eat beans, rice, and salsa forever.
That's right. Your trusty can opener becomes your best kitchen tool.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I have a bunch of questions about that. I guess the first one is, what made you want to go whole foods plant-based back in 2007?
So, well, I grew up, most of my life vegetarian. When I was, I think, about 7, I was eating a hamburger, and we were in the car, and we drove past some cows, and it was the first time in my life that I had put it together that my hamburger didn't grow on a tree like an apple, and it came from a cow, and this is very upsetting to me because I love animals. And so I spent almost my whole life as a vegetarian. And then when I was in my late teens, my family and my friends really put the peer pressure on to, you know, for me to eat meat and eat dairy and eggs and all these things that I'd never really cared for, even as a child. And so I did. I started eating the standard American diet. And as soon as I did, my health just, I mean, it declined. I started getting horrible migraines. My skin was a mess. I had terrible acne, which was very embarrassing as a teenager. I put weight on substantially, and of course my doctor was like, oh, it's puberty, you know, but it couldn't be the lifestyle change, it's a dietary change, it must be, oh, I'm just changing, my body is changing, and my health just continued to decline, and then in my early 20s, I had a very serious scare of cancer, which was, you know, upsetting because I was so young, but I'd also watched my grandmother die of cancer the year before, and it was awful. Colon cancer, all cancers are terrible, but colon cancer was really, really terrible on my grandmother. And I didn't want that for myself, so I decided to go back to being a vegetarian, thinking it would help me make better, healthier choices, and it did. I was eating a lot more vegetables, I was cooking at home more, I was losing weight, my migraines were less infrequent, and I just found a thirst for knowledge, and I kept reading, and I kept reading, and I saw the China study, and I also read Skinny Bitch, and John McDougall's, he now has a book called The Starch Solution. I think his previous book was The McDougall Program. I read that too, and I just was convinced this was it. This was how I was going to prevent myself from getting cancer or heart disease or anything else. And I adopted a whole foods, low fat, no oil, plant-based diet. And I mean, my life radically improved. I lost weight. I stopped getting migraines. I felt amazing. I was in law school at the time, and my grades and my, like, attention in class soared. And my favorite thing I love to tell people is 10 months after adopting this whole foods plant-based diet, I ran a marathon when I was too out of shape to walk a 5K for charity the year before.
Beautiful. So I'd love to hear your China study story, because I remember reading it, and I remember where I opened it, because I was just going to sort of read it for a few minutes. I was sitting on a couch at a friend's house, and like I didn't get up until it was done. And I felt like the world.
I've heard that from a lot of people. Yeah.
I felt like my world was just totally, you know, like the universe picked me up by my feet and shook all the junk out of my pockets. What was your experience?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, I had, I was already, you know, I was like following a vegan diet. I had decided to eliminate animal products, because I had read, the McDougall Program and Skinny Bitch. And while I was reading those two books, like I was literally reading them, someone stopped me and, I was in public. I was like in a park and said, oh, have you read the China study? And I'm like, I'm sorry. And they're like, you should read the China study. It's by two vegans. And they just like kept walking. It was like the most bizarre thing. And I was just like, well, I want to read more books. I was really enjoying the books I was reading. And I was like, okay, I'll read another one. And so I went to the bookstore that day, bought it. And I want to say, if I didn't read it all that night, I finished it the next day. I mean, my life was changed.
So what did it? You were already, you know, what part of the choir that that Dr. Campbell was preaching to? So what did it do for you?
I initially, you know, I was really attracted to eating a plant based diet for vanity reasons, and I'm not embarrassed to admit that I had been overweight. I didn't want to be overweight. I wanted to feel better and, you know, eat healthy, and that's how I ended up on Skinny Bitch and McDougall's books, because they're both about, you know, well, being a skinny bitch and, you know, losing weight. And but for the China study, to see the correlations with cancer, that really struck home with me, because I had just recently lost my grandmother, and, you know, there was a lot of cancer in my family. I would say probably half a dozen, including a cousin that's under the age of 13, have all had cancer in my family. And so it was something that's very at the forefront of my mind, was then is now. And I didn't want that for myself, especially having had my own cancer scare so young. And so it just convinced me, like, this is it. This is how I can avoid cancer. And I mean, that was it. If I wasn't 100% convinced, that did it. That pushed me over.
Hmm. So I'm curious about the transition, because I hear from a lot of people, yeah, I know, I should, I'd love to, and they can never figure out how to make it stick. So they'll do it for 2 weeks, or, you know, I know of people who, you know, they try going whole food plant-based and they feel great, and then they find out they're pregnant, and then they get a scare and go back to what they think is normative and normal. What was it like for you to transition? You said, you know, you did it quickly and you had more energy and you were getting better grades, but was it hard? Was it easy? What was that experience like?
For me, having grown up, I think, a vegetarian, I feel, and I never liked dairy products either, so I feel like it's just easy for me because I did not spend my whole life, eating meat and, dairy. My husband he's plant-based. He loved cheese. He was a total cheese addict, which we know cheese is actually physically addictive. Like, and he struggled so hard. It's very easy for him to give up meat, but he struggled with dairy, and I mean, it's been years, and he doesn't want to eat it, but he says he can still, like, feel, like, the addiction, like, it's still there, it still haunts him. And my parents, actually, they have been plant-based for a little, about almost a year and a half now, over a year, and their big thing was my father had a heart attack, and that was it. They were like, okay, we have to do this now.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I feel like my parents are very motivated to stick to it because my dad doesn't want to have another heart attack. He feels blessed that he got a second chance at life. And so that's very motivating for them. And so I think that's where it comes for a lot of people, is they need some sort of motivation to keep them going. And, you know, that's always, I think, the hard part. Because I work with a lot of people who have had, like you said, they felt great, but then they fell off, or they got peer pressured, or something happened, they're pregnant, like you said. And I think, you know, it's definitely different for everyone, but I always tell people to hold sight of why it is that they're doing this, what their motivation is. Is it to avoid sickness or whatever? And for me, once I saw what those foods did to me, like what was going to happen if I continued to eat them, I just saw them as poison. And so I don't even look at a chicken sandwich and think of it as an option or a food I can eat. It's just like, oh no, that's, you know, that's toxic. And I walk right past it, kind of like how I'd walk past the paint chip.
Yeah. A week ago, I guess, I posted a photograph that I took at a convention, hallway where they, you know, they had the food break, and there was a big plate of crudité, like, you know, cherry tomatoes, celery, carrots, cauliflower, and right next to it was a tray of cookies and brownies and pastries and things like that. And the pastry tray was like half empty, and the crudité tray was almost full. And I actually felt like walking past there, I felt a little bad. Like, it wasn't actually my conference, so, you know, I would have been stealing by taking any of it. But I felt like, had I been at that, online for that, and everybody around me was taking the brownies, I would have felt a little bad, a little deprived, just taking this thing of vegetables. And so I posted this, the photograph with a question saying, how do you deal with this? And the people, there were two groups of people. One group said, oh, I don't even think about that. I just think of the cookies as poison, you know, like you said, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
And then there was another group that was really struggling, and I was struck by the difference in how they talked about it. And the group that was struggling hadn't really committed to an identity.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So
a very interesting observation.
So I love that, you know, you name, I guess, yourself the happy herbivore, and all of us in your tribe as happy herbivores. And I love the idea that we're happy, because so much of the language about diet is kind of fear-based. And I wondered if you could, you know, talk about the difference between a sort of avoidance mentality and a, you know, I want a vibrant, happy, gorgeous life mentality.
Yeah, one thing I always say to my clients is, it's not that you can't have something, it's that you're choosing not to, which is an extremely powerful way of thinking. And like yesterday, my father-in-law was visiting us, and he was drinking this latte from Starbucks, and he's like, oh, you can't have this. he meant because it had milk and sugar in it, and not that, sugar's a type of bits fragment, I don't need it, whatever, but point is, it had milk in it, and that's why he was telling me I couldn't have it. And I'm like, well, actually, I can have it. I'm just choosing not to because I really don't want to put dairy into my body. And I even saw within him that he kind of shifted his way of thinking because he never thought of it that way before. He just looks at my diet as, oh, all these things are off limits. And it's like, well, no, they're not off limits. I'm not like allergic to them. It's just I'm choosing not to eat those things. And I see such relief, like a sigh of relief in my clients when I tell them that. They're like, oh, that's right. I have this power to make this decision. But I did like what you said about committing to an identity. Like making that commitment with yourself, that it certainly helps. And I read this psychology book recently that actually said that's a huge thing for people. So like if someone, starts doing a cleanup effort in their community, they start viewing themselves as, oh, I'm this person that does good things for my community. I'm this person that does good environmental choices. And so even this one small thing they did, cleaning up their street with their neighbors, then makes them in their life start doing things. They found they started picking up trash and bottles and parking lots and throwing it away, which is something they didn't do before, but they just started doing it because they had this new vision of themselves as this, good spirited person. And so that's why I always focus on the happy, is because you're happy when you're thriving. And when you eat a whole foods, plant-based diet, you do thrive, which makes you happy.
Right. That reminds me of a study I read where a group of researchers went to houses in the neighborhood and asked them if they would put a big lawn sign up saying, please.
Yeah, that's the book I was reading.
Okay. Mm-hmm. About wearing seatbelts, right? And nobody wanted to, to put that lawn sign up, but they asked them if they put a teeny little window placard, and everybody said yes. And then when they came back and asked them for the lawn sign, so they had made an identity shift, and now they were trying to be consistent with this new identity.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So, it occurs to me that, when I work with people, I don't try to get them to change anything except to maybe make one dish a week that's whole food plant-based that they'll like.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see that they have the power to do it, as you said, and that it's got this immediate positive feedback loop.
Yeah, I have this and it's so often how I find people don't realize that they already love and eat things. I don't want to eat plant-based because I don't like beans, or I don't like curry. They always have these strange comments. And so I was with this woman. She's married to a friend of mine, and she's like, oh, I could never be plant-based. Oh, the food is so gross. I couldn't do it. And she really went on for a while. And I just happened to, see what she was eating. Like we were at like a picnic, and I realized that she had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and I just started laughing. And she's like, what is it? I'm like, well, you're technically eating a plant-based lunch. And she's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, well, it's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I mean, that's there's no animal product in that. And she's like, well, there's butter in peanut butter. And I think I crushed her soul to tell her there was not really butter in peanut butter. But no, I mean, her whole lunch, which, I mean, it was like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with carrots and an apple. And I think she had a fizzy water or something. But, I mean, it was a plant-based lunch, and I was just and this woman, I had just gone on for 10 minutes about how she could never do it. And this was a lunch that she probably takes to work pretty often, It was funny. Sometimes people just have this vision that we all eat, tofu at every meal, and I'm like, I hardly ever eat tofu. It's okay. If you don't like tofu, you can still be plant-based.
I know. I discovered I have a sensitivity to soy. I did this 30-day elimination diet, and when I started having, tofu scrambles in the morning, I started getting sort of cranky and irritable, so I cut out tofu, and now people are just amazed, there's anything left.
I get that all the time, because my mom, it has to be soy-free, and then what does she eat? I'm like, a lot of food.
So I'm curious also, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said they all think we, eat tofu with a side of tofu. I don't even remember the last time I had tofu.
Right. We definitely need better PR. but one thing I'm curious about is, so you started blogging because you couldn't find a cookbook you liked, Were you a chef, a trained chef? How did you come up with, you know,
four
cookbooks now full of recipes?
Yeah, I'm writing my fifth. Our publisher keeps me very busy. I'm a lawyer. I don't practice anymore. I don't have time, but I was originally in law school when I started, the blog happyherbivore.com. And then I, started writing books after law school because, you know, it wasn't until my blog was a few years old that I started actually doing books. But yeah, I was, a lawyer. I've never been to culinary school. And for me, I joke that when I got sent off to college, I didn't even know how to boil water to make pasta. And the first few years my husband and I were married, he did all of the cooking. And when I told him I wanted to be a vegetarian again, he was kind of like, oh, that's fine. Yeah, I can figure some stuff out. And then when I was like, yeah, and I also want to take out dairy and eggs and oil, he was kind of like, have at that. I have no idea what to make for you. And so in a lot of ways, it was a blessing. I mean, I wouldn't have this career had my husband not said, like, okay, you cook. Because I literally had to stumble in the kitchen and figure out how to feed myself, because I never really had. When I was living with my mom cooked my meals. She packed me a lunch. You know, she made dinner every night. She's a great mom. And then I, you know, was in college and lived off of the dorm food or the cafeteria or ordering a pizza. And then I met my husband in college. And so then he was responsible for feeding me. So I just learned. And there were a lot of failures. I still have them sometimes. But I fell in love with cooking. I really did. And I think what it was is I just fell in love with food because it was the first time that I saw food as a way to, like, energize and nourish me, because I always had stomach problems. I hated to eat. I was so reluctant. I didn't really like anything. I can remember going to restaurants and being upset in the restaurant because nothing on the menu appealed to me. It's funny to me because I love food now, and I think it's because I know it feels so good and it finally tastes so good because I'm not, like, you know, overloading my mouth with, like, fat, sugar, and oil. And, I'm such a different person than I was before. I think I ate, like, chicken nuggets and pizza, and that was about my whole limit of my food. And now I eat this huge, wide variety of food, cuisines I never would have considered, ingredients there's no way I would have eaten. So, I mean, and I hear that. My parents are the same way. Oh, I never eat Indian or Ethiopian food. It's their favorite now. Get them to try Thai food to save my life. It's their favorite cuisine. They make Thai food at home almost every night. So, I mean, it's amazing to see that in people.
Right. So when we go traveling, do you, like, you know, you find out you're going to be in, you know, Portland or something, you immediately start looking for the best restaurants?
I do sometimes. You know, I will look if I'm going to a place that I know that's going to have a lot of stuff. I will do, like, a search to see, like, what's there or whatever. But sometimes I like to just stumble into a restaurant and see what can happen. I was in Ireland a few months ago, and my husband and I were so hungry, and we just stopped in this little tiny village of, like, maybe 300 people, one restaurant in the whole place. And I was like, oh gosh, the best we can hope for here in a small village in Ireland is a potato. And turned out that the owner of this restaurant, his parents were vegetarian, and he was really knew what, you know, like, vegan and plant-based. He understood what that meant, and he made a custom meal for us that was by far one of the best meals I've ever had in my life. And I felt like such a jerk because I'm like, here I was putting down this little tiny restaurant in this little tiny town, and not there with it. And thinking the only vegan thing they're going to have is a potato. And I had an amazing, it was one of the best meals I've ever had.
Yeah. And I do have to say that, you know, I still get that kind of, you know, negative assumption places, but more and more frequently, you know, the word is spreading. People are growing in consciousness. It's a lot easier to eat well now than it was 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Oh, yeah. When I was first plant-based, I was lucky to get white pasta, but it definitely seems like it's improving. And I live in California now, and everyone in LA, you know, they're pretty much vegan. So I don't have any problems here, but I've traveled all around the world, and I haven't had a problem. And it's sometimes it's funny. I was in Mexico with my sister last year on vacation, and we'd gone through the list of all the foods we don't eat. My sister's also plant-based. We're like, we don't eat fish, chicken. I mean, we knew every word in Spanish, and we went through our list of 15 things, and then they offered us tongue tacos. And I just didn't even know what to do with myself at that point. I was like, no, I don't want tongue either.
That gives new meaning to the phrase, bite your tongue. Wow.
And I mean, it was, I thought it was so funny. I was like, no, I don't want the tongue either.
So I wanted to ask you about, I think what you write about the three pillars of your veganism. Cause as you may know, you know, Dr. Campbell doesn't really like the words vegetarian or vegan.
Right.
For various reasons. And you know, he's concerned mostly with the effects of foods on our health. We both know vegans who eat, you know, just atrociously, who define themselves by what they eliminate rather than what they choose. But you're interested in health, but you're also interested in a couple of other things. Could you talk a little bit about your three pillars?
Yeah, well, I find that my whole sort of lifestyle it's like a three-legged stool. I obviously care deeply about my health and the health of others, which is why I promote a whole foods plant-based diet. But I'm certainly moved by the plight of farm animals, and my husband and I are also very conscious of the environmental consequences of animal products and, you know, how you can really benefit the environment by leaving animal products off your plate. And there's some other issues too, like humanitarian issues and, you know, depletion of resources, which I guess goes back to the environment, and just some other humanitarian resources. Like I've actually been to farms with animal rights agents and people who do undercover research to sort of exploit the animal brutality. But you know what? It's also really awful for the migrant workers too. And to know the conditions that they're forced into as well as the animals is also just very devastating. And so it's, you know, I guess maybe not a three-pronged stool, but like a five-legged table for why I eat, you know, a plant-based diet. But I find with everyone, and I agree with, you know, Dr. Campbell that, you know, vegan in and of itself doesn't automatically mean healthy. You could eat Oreos and French fries all day and be vegan. But I find a lot of people, even if they were initially motivated, you know, for the health benefits of a plant-based diet, like my parents, for example, as time progresses, the other issues start to come into their life too.
So if someone's listening to this who has been eating standard American or kind of high dairy vegetarian, and they wanted to explore, what advice would you give them just starting out?
You know, just take it a meal at a time. Every time that you can eat a plant-based meal, do it. You know, your body will thank you for it. But a lot of people, like you said, ease their way into it. Maybe they commit to one meal or one day a week. Before my parents were 100% plant-based, they started out with meatless Mondays, which was really more like vegan Mondays because they didn't use any animal products on Monday. And then they ended up doing it 2 days a week, and then it was 3 days a week. And then when after my father had his heart attack, it was 7 days a week, which is great. But, you know, it's taking it a meal at a time is great. I always tell people not to worry about, you know, 7 months from now. Like it'll be their third day being plant-based in January, and they're going, oh, my God, what am I going to do at Thanksgiving? I'm like, you know what, let's worry about Thanksgiving in November. Right now, let's worry about today. Let's not worry about the barbecue in 4 months or Christmas in 12 months. Let's just focus on what you're going to eat for lunch.
Right. Great advice. And it also points out how many sort of social and cultural, you know, resting places there are for us that are kind of triggers for standard American meat eating. You know, one of the things.
Oh yeah, like.
Go ahead.
Crazy. No, I was saying like it seems like our whole experience is linked to like meat consumption in a lot of ways, like the social experience, which is kind of sad.
Right. And, you know, and as a parent, I saw this with my kids where they were really missing out at, you know, birthday parties. You know, you know, people would look at me like, you're not going to let your kid have the ice cream. You're going to, you know, you're not going to let them eat the cake. Like, what kind of ogre are you?
Yeah, I find that with the parents all the time that parents will say that because my husband's sister, one of her children is vegan, and he doesn't the child does not feel like he's missing out. He doesn't want the cupcakes. He's much happier to have the bowl of fruit. But, like, it's the parents, not even the other kids, that are like, oh, you're so mean for not letting him have that cupcake. It's like, what? Does the kid look like he's in misery? He's loving his strawberries.
Right. Well, you know, I think there's a lot of, you know, I certainly get a lot of negativity from people who think that somehow I'm attacking their lifestyle choices. Right, by eating a bowl of fruit.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You know, like, no, you know, at this thing I was at last week at dinner, I didn't have the you know, the cannoli cake, which was an awesomely elaborate thing with a cannoli on top of a piece of cake, you know. Well, and I don't think I've ever seen this, but that sounds crazy. it was remarkable, you know. To their credit, most of the people at the table could not finish it, but I just said, you know, and I saw they had like some blueberries, like three blueberries on each plate as garnish. And I said, could you like round up a whole herd of those and give them to me in a bowl?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
And, like, people were, well, you know,
I get that all the time. Yeah.
they felt like my sitting there enjoying my fruit was some sort of commentary on their life.
Oh, I know. It's amazing. I hear that all the time, and I certainly experienced it. I love to tell a story. When I went plant-based, I lived in Boston, which is a very meat and seafood-centric city, and I had this one friend, which I use, you know, friend in quotes, who was just so upset by my choice not to put meat on my plate. The pinnacle end of our friendship was when she was like, well, I'm just going to go buy meat and throw it away to make up for your lack of consumption. And this just blew my mind. I was like, okay, even if you fundamentally disagree with me on whether or not one should eat meat, why would you go buy it and spend your money on it to throw it away? I still do say it's scratch and scratcher. But, yeah, I find people are, like, deeply offended by, I don't have to say anything at all. I can just, like you, sit there eating my bowl of blueberries, and people think I'm somehow commenting, and I'm just eating my blueberries. But I found, and what I like to always tell my clients, is you become a mirror, and people don't like what they see. And so to feel better about themselves, they attack you. And it's always about the person attacking and not the person who's being attacked. Like, in every instance, when someone has gotten upset with me because I ordered a salad, it was about them. I mean, clearly it was not about the salad.
Right. Yeah, one of the things I realized is, you know, when I was starting to transition and I was talking with people, and we would go to, you know, to a retreat, and we'd get all this great food, and then we'd come back and we'd discuss how hard it was to keep it up. I grew up in a moderately religious Jewish community where a lot of people kept kosher. And I just noticed that those people who kept kosher were never like walking around going, oh God, can I avoid that cheeseburger today? Am I going to eat those shrimp? Like, it wasn't part of their consciousness. And it's coming back to that idea of identity. And one thing I loved about
that's a really good point. Sorry. Yeah, so, I just had to say what a great point that was.
You can interrupt me to compliment me anytime. One of the things I loved about the three prongs is that, you know, if you're not feeling one of them one day, the other two can support you. So it becomes a whole expression of who you are. You know, I never thought about eating as particularly like sacred until pretty recently, where, you know, it's like the most intimate interaction we have with our universe is that we're taking something from the outside that's being like sort of freely provided, and we're making it part of ourselves. And like, I'm like, wow, that's like deep. I should do that consciously.
Yeah. I really just love that comment about growing up, because I have, I'm from New York, and I have a lot of friends who keep very strict kosher, because they're Jewish as well, and that's such an amazing point, because they really, my friends won't even eat in, like, a restaurant that's not kosher. I mean, they're very, very strict about what they will and want to eat, and I've never heard them say that. That's really amazing. I mean, I don't know why it never occurred to me, and I'm just, like, my mind's blown, but I've never ever heard them complain. And it has to be challenging for them, even though they're omnivore, just to even be in a restaurant among coworkers, because I don't think they'd be able to eat because the restaurant's not kosher. But yeah, like you said, I never once have heard them complain or remark that it's a challenge.
Right. And which kind of brings me to the closing here, is that, you know, great appreciation for you for the work you do. I think one of the things you're doing with the blog, with telling your story in such a sort of human, you know, folksy way, with sharing all these recipes, with sharing that you were never a great cook until you kind of, you know, struggled with it, is that you're helping to create a community. And really what the kosher community is a community of people who kind of get together and support each other and create new norms. So instead of having to struggle at the barbecue on July 4th or the Thanksgiving dinner in November, we find like-minded people who can help us until we're strong enough to, you know, to venture out into the world.
I love that about the internet is, you know, I have made so many great friends from the internet that I have not met in person, but they are very important to my life. And I know being the only vegan I knew in Boston at the time, it meant so much to me to meet other people online who were doing what I was doing. Even if they were, you know, 1,000 miles away, it was so nice to have that circle of acceptance and common ground.
Yeah. So for people who want to find out more about you, about your work, where can they go?
My website is happyherbivore.com, and then there's also a Happy Herbivore Facebook page, which is an amazing place to go if you are looking to make a friend or know someone. The Facebook page is a huge wall of love and support and community, and everyone is welcome. You don't have to be 100% plant-based to be a part of the community. They call themselves Herbies, and they're amazing. Every day, I just look at how wonderful the community is. And then there's the China community website, too, which is also awesome. Love that. So both of those are good places to go.
Okay. Awesome. So which one of your books should people buy first? Which is the easiest for someone who's looking to transition?
Well, they're all very different. So the Happy Herbivore Cookbook is all about comfort food. It is healthy, low-fat, oil-free, plant-based, vegan versions of things that you used to eat, like cinnamon buns or meatballs or burgers or macaroni and cheese. So a lot of those sort of comfort foods, that book is all about having new versions of it. Everyday Happy Herbivore is all about sort of like back to the basics, quick and easy. Everything comes together in like 5 to 15 minutes. It's, you know, the shortest amount of ingredients. It's just, you know, really back to basics. I lived on a small island in the Caribbean when I wrote that book, and I had to cook 3 meals a day because there was nowhere for my husband and I to go to eat. So that book sort of celebrates like cooking from scratch 3 times a day, but it's not elaborate. It's, you know, quick, easy, let me feed myself. Mm-hmm. And then my third book, Happy Herbivore Abroad, is all international dishes. It's healthy, plant-based, oil-free, low-fat versions of, you know, traditional things like cacciatore or, you know, something like that. So depending on what someone is really into, you know, if they want quick and easy, if they want their pizza again, comfort foods, you know, that I would pick based on, you know, what kind of drives you. But, of course, I'm going to recommend all of them equally.
Well, I think
my new book will be out this December.
Okay, can you tell us what the new book is?
Yep, it's called Happy Herbivore Light and Lean, and it's celebrating the whole health component, you know, exercise for a healthy body that also gives a healthy mind, and then recipes that are really light, I focus on caloric density, you know, less is more, so you get more food, less calories, so it's a great book for total health.
Awesome. I love the way you just described those three, because I was immediately thinking about different people and, you know, that I know and their main objection. Like, oh, I just don't have time. Or I could never
every day's for them.
I could never do without the mac and cheese, or I really miss, or, you know, my weakness is X. Right? When I hear people like, my weakness is X, it sounds like the Happy Herbivore is the cure for that one.
Would be for them.
And for people who feel like, you know, I was talking to a guy who was, he'd gone totally plant-based, and then he said, you know, I added back about like a teaspoon of oil a day just because I didn't want to like cut myself off from like the world's culinary cuisine, you know, the cuisine of the world. And so for someone like that, the abroad sounds like it would be a great way for them to kind of stay in touch with their, haute cuisine desires.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I try to do with every book that I write. I try to hit a new, like, audience, or like you said, an objection. to sort of prove that you can really have it all. And that was sort of my thing with abroad, is people thought that, like, oh, well, if I'm plant-based, then I have to eat tofu and, you know, beans with a side of rice. And it's like, no, you can still eat all the, even French food. You can eat it. You can eat it healthy. Oh, France is a fun, always a fun place. I lived on a French island for a year, and trying to explain to French that butter is not a vegetable is an experience. They just, like, the chefs, I worked with a bunch of chefs because we were there because my husband worked for a hotel chain, and we got basically sent down there for a year for my husband to work at the hotel on that island. There was a celebrity who came, Shania Twain, and she and her family eat a predominantly plant-based diet. And so they're like, oh my gosh, Scott's wife's going to have to come cook because nobody knows how to cook vegan. Like, somebody's going to have to come do it. And so I had to teach the chefs how to make all of these, like, vegan and plant-based options for Shania Twain and anyone else who came. And the French chefs were just, like, so shocked that I did not think butter was, like, this integral thing every dish. But by the end of my time there, they all realized that butter was not essential. It was amazing. They started making things without butter. And I was like, good job, guys. That's awesome.
Awesome. Hey, so what else are you working on besides the cookbooks that folks should know about?
We also have a 7-day meal plan service called Get Meal Plans, and it's at getmealplans.com, and it's really great for people who are starting out or want to eat better, or just, you know, need some guidance on how to eat a whole foods plant-based diet. And basically, when you start with the meal plan, you get all of your meals for the week, you get a shopping list, you get a recipe, so you just go to the store, buy the stuff, prepare it, and you have food, and it's really wonderful for people who are starting out. And another thing we have is we have a 3-day reboot and a 10-day cleanse immersion, which are sort of just like shorter kind of versions where you do it for 3 to 10 days, sort of like detox, jumpstart, you know, eat some yummy plant-based food, heal your body. And you learn some stuff, you know, about like habits and nutrition. So they're both fun programs as well.
Awesome. So it sounds like, you know, when we try to teach people, we really want to give them the basic principles and empower them to make their own choices and use their own judgment. And yet I find when I'm trying to learn something new, that's kind of the last thing I want is those, you know, having those extra brain cycles. I just, you know, I'll learn it from experience, but it sounds so great to just, you know, just tell me what to do. Don't make me think. Let me do what I already know how to do.
Right. Yeah. Some people like that, you know, kind of helping hand, that coach, that buddy, and that's what it's for.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been working out for years and years, and every so often I get bored with what I'm doing and I look for something else. And I just found this like $2 app that basically just tells me what to do. Like every 3 minutes, it just tells me something. And I have to tell you, it's like really relaxing to just be told what
yeah.
to do by someone who
and
has
And I want this
idea.
App.
Yeah. I'll email it to you. I don't want to distract people from your wonderful stuff. But
yeah.
it sounds like that's what, so it's getmealplans.com?
Yep, getmealplans.com. And the reboot and cleanse are
rebootcleanse911.com. Rebootcleanse911.com. And can people find those links also from happyherbivore.com?
Of course. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cool. So this is a way to kind of jump in and experience the benefits just as a beginner or as someone who just has a lot of other stuff going on. Like I read a profile of President Obama. I think it was in Esquire magazine. It said like he only has like 2-color shirts and one type of suit because he read somewhere that like every decision we make takes some amount of mental energy. And if we're just making lots and lots of like trivial decisions all the time, we don't have energy for the big ones. So it sounds like as people are starting out that you're kind of removing that, all that friction and just saying, don't make decisions now. Just take it easy and allow yourself to kind of settle into this joyous and life-giving, lifestyle.
Right. Yeah. We're doing all of the work for you. And, a lot of our users, you know, they are newbies and they have no idea where to start. And then we have, a lot of users who are like, Lindsay, I just want you to do the work for me. You know, I know that you're going to make sure I eat healthy and I eat right and I won't have to think about it. I just buy your meal plan. And That's what I love the most is the people that it helps out because they're really busy or maybe they're moms and they need a family meal plan and they don't want to think about dinner planning because they have 8 million other things to do because they're moms.
Right.
So, you know, it's great for a lot of different people for, you know, various needs.
Awesome. So we've got the reboot, the cleanse, and the meal plan. So it sounds like you're kind of taking yourself as your market, hearkening back to when you were just starting out and kind of a kitchen klutz, you know, kind of stuff that would have been really helpful to you.
God, I would have loved this back then.
Awesome. So anyone who's in that place, either not sure what to do or just frankly you don't have the time or you do have the time but you'd rather spend it elsewhere, it sounds like these are really awesome services that you're providing for folks.
I love them.
Well, Lindsay Nixon, thank you so much. I really enjoyed our conversation. I look forward to meeting you and finding our paths crossing somewhere someday. And I'm really looking forward to...
Yes, hopefully soon.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to the cookbooks. And I'll be posting, you know, badly lit photos of my attempts to make them on the internet.
I can't wait to see it. Thank you for having me. It was so much fun.
All right. Well, take care. Have a great day, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
All right. Sounds great.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Savali Dawn as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize, all the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.